Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the sound. It's Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Thanks for tuning in to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. So, what's new in healthcare here in Western Connecticut and Westchester County, New York? Why, it's Nuvance, the recently merged medical and healthcare assets of Western Connecticut Health Network and HealthQuest. So today we'll meet the team at the top of Nuvance as we sit down with the newly joined network's president and its CEO to learn how this expansion will provide state residents the expertise of more than 2,600 physicians and 12,000 employees across seven major hospitals and dozens of partnering provider groups. Then we'll ask you again, are you ready to relay? Over the next few weeks and months, dozens of Connecticut communities, regions, and colleges will be hosting Relays for Life to raise funds for and awareness of the American Cancer Society, its critical research project, and the many services available to caregivers and families grappling with cancer in your neighborhood. We'll meet a couple of passionate Relay for Life supporters and learn why these non-sporting events are such incredible community-building activities. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Voquette, right after this reminder. Disability in Connecticut welcomes you to the Meet the Service Providers event coming up this Friday, May 10th from 9 to 11 at the Eversource offices on Selden Street in Berlin. Take this opportunity to meet the organizations that can assist you in your search for qualified job candidates with disabilities. These organizations work directly with job seekers with disabilities and can serve as your connection to these job seekers. You can learn about service provider partners, meet representatives from organizations, and take the first step toward connecting with the service providers that can best assist you in finding job candidates with disabilities who have the necessary qualifications to fill your open positions now and in the future. You'll see how these organizations have partnered with employers like you to create a more inclusive workplace and the benefits of this inclusive culture. If you'd like to reserve your place or learn more, just go to disabilityinct.org. And if you're ready to get your garden growing or just want to make your property that much more attractive, the Yukon Master Gardener Program is hosting a plant sale fundraiser Saturday, May 18th from 9 to 1 at the Yukon Fairfield County Extension Center on Stony Hill Road in Bethel. This fundraiser is an effort to ensure that master gardeners and the larger Connecticut gardening community continue to have valuable educational programs and community outreach. Attractions include a variety of native plants for sale, auction, bidding on garden themed items, tours of the demonstration garden, and expert advice from experienced master gardeners. You want to learn more about the College of Agriculture, Health, and Natural Resources Extension? Call 207-8440. That's 203-207-8440. Or visit extension.yukon.edu.
All right, Connecticut and New York, we have a new name in healthcare, Nuvance. That's right. We're here at Danbury Hospital today meeting with the two new leaders of Nuvance. This new health system was created to provide communities across New York's Hudson Valley and Western Connecticut with more convenient, accessible, and affordable care. HealthQuest and Western Connecticut Health Network have merged to form this new nonprofit health systems. And we're talking to the two guys at the top today, Dr. John Murphy, longtime acquaintance of mine, CEO of the operation, and Robert Friedberg, a brand new acquaintance, who will be serving as president. So my understanding is, Robert, that you're sort of more the business end and the operational nuts and bolts of things in terms of your specific duties here. Can you kind of talk a little bit about where your hands will be engaged in this early stage of the merger process?
Sure. My job right now is really to make sure that the operations of the health system are performing effectively and we're really meeting the strategic objectives that we set out even before the merger to make sure that all of the things operationally come true.
And what were your couple of really high end goals as you were coming through the process that just delivered Nuvance now less than 5 days ago from when we speak?
Well, I think what we're trying to get accomplished is first to make sure that we're developing a great team. and make sure that everybody is aligned across the organization and being able to pursue the goals that we've laid out, which is really to make sure that we are pursuing quality first and foremost, and then being able to look at how we're going to improve the quality and care that's provided to this larger community.
How much of what you were doing prior to this coming together of these two systems will be carried over versus kind of new responsibilities for you?
I think for me, a lot of this is learning the environment in Connecticut. And so I have a great team that is continuing to do the operation at the hospital levels. I have great hospital presidents at our New York hospitals. I've got to learn the Connecticut environment, learn the people here, and get to know their skills and their talents and be able to bring that together as a full team.
Well, a big part of this is your Connecticut patients having access to this spectacular new group from New York. Can you talk a little bit about some of the areas of heightened expertise that maybe not be will be coming onto the scene for the first time, but will be supplementing what is already was Western Connecticut Health Network? Tell us a little bit about some of the experts who Connecticut patients might be seeing now, thanks to your coming into the group.
I think we're early in this process of being able to figure out who are going to be the people that cross over between New York mm-hmm. and Connecticut. I would think the biggest opportunity is looking at where we're going to be able to recruit people, specifically with this idea that they're going to go across the two health systems and look at those areas in which we have opportunity, whether or not it's in thoracic or whether or not it is in oncology or in neurosciences, and look for those expertise and those physicians and providers that really want to develop new subspecialized programs that do cut across. I think for the most part, the practitioners that are in both Connecticut and New York will continue to do what they're doing today, and the opportunity is really on the what's going to come in the future.
Fantastic. Dr. Murphy, how about you? As CEO of the organization, you've got great familiarity with what's happening in Connecticut through the Western Connecticut Health Network, now Nuvance. Tell us a little bit about how you're going to be occupied in the next few weeks and months as the this coming together of these two systems become one.
Well, I would say, much as Robert has, that I need to learn New York, much as he needs to learn Connecticut. And he's a terrifically competent healthcare executive, and I think his focus on running the hospitals will free me up to a certain extent to think about some of the larger strategic opportunities that we can collectively bring to bear for our communities, as well as whether or not there are any other partnerships that we ought to consider to try to enhance the value of this new system. And in addition, I think I'll be focusing on some of the advocacy issues. Certainly the state of Connecticut poses a host of legislative challenges by virtue of some of the budgetary issues. And then similarly, I think that the state of New York is also experiencing some issues with respect to healthcare financing. So I think Robert and I will make a good team and complement one another's strengths.
How difficult to even put this question together, but in terms of the world that is the New York regulatory situation and the Connecticut regulatory situation, is there a lot of overlap, or are there going to be a lot of kind of one foot on each horse at the front of the team here?
I think there will be. We'll be straddling the border on a number of issues. But with respect to our single biggest payer, which is the federal government, I think there we have a common opportunities and a common reimbursement system. When it comes to the Medicaid programs, the states do have different approaches to that, different rules, different reimbursement rates, and we will have to address them, I think, in many respects separately, although our approach to patient care will be the same. And then as it relates to commercial contracts and managed care contracts, for the most part, those two are state-specific. However, we would look to address opportunities with some of the larger employers who have employees in both states. So I think it will be a mix-and-match approach to state-specific strategies versus broader network strategies.
As this was all coming together and you were looking across the border at what could be, which is now reality with Nuvance, what were a few of the things that you thought even early on might be really, really nice to have, or really positive things that come out of this in terms of the personnel, the facilities, the technology, the locations of some of the New York side affiliates?
Three things come to mind. As we built Nuvance from an idea into a reality, I think we did want to address our employees to say, how can we offer each of you opportunities to grow in the network into bigger positions if you choose to, and have this be a great place to work? And I think with 12,000 employees, we have the ability to offer meaningful job growth for almost everyone, as well as to recruit in top talent to manage the organization. From a physician perspective, as Robert said a little while ago, we do think that the opportunity to serve a million or a million and a half people is incredibly attractive, and this is a contiguous market, so that we will be able to, I think, fairly easily cross borders, as opposed to having to, you know, go 2.5 hours to a remote hospital. These are contiguous locations. It's a million and a half people with wonderful community-based organizations. We do think, however, that we can attract talent into the organization that will allow patients to receive access to very sophisticated care close to home. And then the last thing, John, about your question around technology, we do think that the adoption of sophisticated and contemporary technology will help us be successful in many different domains. And by virtue of combining the finances of both organizations, we're a $2.5 billion system, I think will be very attractive to the credit rating agencies, so that we will have access to capital to make those investments collectively as opposed to having to do it individually.
Very good. Mr. Friedberg, a lot of times when people hear about even two single hospitals merging, never mind two massive healthcare systems, the automatic knee-jerk reaction, sadly, in the mind of a lot of people is it's just all about the money. But in fact, what I'm hearing today is such incredible opportunities for healthcare delivery here. Can you talk about the lead-up to the merger and kind of the nuts and bolts, the important points in your mind that maybe people don't really think about in terms of when two systems like this come together? How is the frontline customer going to be the beneficiary of this in your mind in this early stage?
I think one of the things that's really an advantage of having a health system that's come together like this is our ability to learn from each other. And I'll take that first and foremost into the ability to look at the differences in how we approach quality and effectiveness and learn the best practices that are across the health system. So as we get larger and we bring these two together, we're able to have the opportunity to talk to more physicians, more clinicians, being able to address quality in a different way so we can push the envelope and make sure that we're pursuing the highest quality that we can provide and get the value available to the community and those people that come here. And I think first and foremost, that's the best thing that we can do for this entire community is address how to improve quality by learning from each other.
Was that what kind of excited you to the extent that it may have as this thing was starting to look like it was definitely going to happen? Because certainly a lot of these mergers get to a pretty advanced state, and then they end up not happening across the country and around the world. This did happen. What were a few of the things that were exciting as you saw that it was going to actually happen?
I think the thing that really started to get our energy up was our ability to really start to work as a team together across the two health systems, even before we merged, and start to plan and think about how we were going to improve the capabilities. And there's been a lot of work that's already begun about looking at what programs we might be able to enhance in the future, how would that start to look, and how we would get the teams aligned across the health system, this broader health system now, to be able to look at how we're going to deliver a different level of care to the community and improve their access, their effectiveness, and the value for everybody.
Excellent. Dr. Murphy, the facilities of Nuvance are not just the hospitals. There are networks of physicians and practitioners, laboratories, therapy offices. Talk a little bit about the broader picture. You kind of threw the numbers out in terms of the amount of employees and the population served, but this is an entity that is going to be a huge presence in every single community, and it won't just be centered within the hospital complex proper, right?
That's absolutely true, John. This will be, I think, the major provider of health care in 85 separate communities across both states, as I said earlier, serving about 1.5 million people. And that continuum of care would include everything from the primary care offices to urgent care sites to inpatient hospital stays, home care offices and home care staff, pre-hospital care, whether it's emergency medical services or ambulances, et cetera, paramedics, and a competent ED staff, imaging facilities, laboratory facilities, other ancillary services like physical therapy and occupational therapy, et cetera. We also want to collectively, as Robert said, come together, form teams that will allow us to more efficiently deliver care even through virtual health strategies. So truthfully, over time, I think that we will de-emphasize some of the hospital campuses. They're still going to be incredibly important. When you're sick enough that you require hospitalization, you want to have access to a superb facility that offers safe and high-quality care. But more and more, I think we expect to deliver care to patients in non-hospital settings.
So, Mr. Freeberg, kind of teetering on the edge, it sounds like, of a kind of innovative and leading new model in healthcare where the most relevant or important treatment that's required within the hospital proper is happening there, but a lot more opportunities out in the communities for people to drive even shorter distances to get even really important and sometimes critical care that they might need for themselves without ever having to actually go into the hospital in town.
Yeah, I agree with John. I think there's a great opportunity to be able to look at where we've got our physician practices, how we're going to grow those, put more points into the community where people could go to get outpatient physical therapy, outpatient laboratory, outpatient office visits, et cetera, so that they have the ability to bring this care out into the community and look at also how we're going to look at the preventative side of that, being able to understand how we're going to push into more preventative and value-based care. And that's really all mostly going to happen at the outpatient side as well.
And perhaps if an individual has something wrong with them that falls in good alignment with the physician who's come into the system from Western Connecticut Health Network, then that magical connection could be the life and death difference.
That's correct. And being able to have the infrastructure behind them that allows all of those clinical capabilities to come to bear when it's necessary, including, for example, having a completely integrated electronic medical record. So if there's one EMR that covers everything, the outpatient clinics across the entire health system, all the hospitals, all the clinics. So when someone enters at any one of our access points, whether it's a physician office or an emergency department, their entire medical record is available to every practitioner across the board instantaneously.
Thank you. Dr. Murphy, the last word from you. Next steps, what's the in the short term, in the next few months, what will you be looking forward most to working on with this merger now completed?
I think we're all very excited about the opportunities that we can see over the next year or two or three. one of my first priorities is really going to help us organize our approach to a strategic plan to say what is it we want to get done in year one versus year two versus year three. Organize the team around a common set of values and standards and build a culture that represents New Vance Health. It will probably be different than the legacy Western Connecticut Health Network as well as legacy HealthQuest, but I very much look forward to building a team, bringing clarity to the organization about what it is we want to get done, and then reassuring the community and various stakeholders that this is a big win for everybody.
NewVanceHealth.org. New Vance Health.
Oh, not yet.
Okay, we're gonna be telling you in the future where you can go to learn more about this exciting development. As we said, we're just a few days post formalizing of this coming together. Should folks just go to the HealthQuest.org for now, and WCHN.org for information. Even so new that the radio host doesn't have it all together. New Vance Health will serve 1.5 million residents, as we heard from Dr. Murphy, across New York and Connecticut. 2,600 aligned physicians, 12,000 employees, 7 hospitals, Danbury, New Milford, Northern Dutchess, Norwalk, Putnam Hospital Center, Sharon Hospital, and Vassar Brothers Medical Center, along with their massive network of primary care and specialty practices and multiple affiliated organizations, all part of this brand new health system serving Connecticut and New York. New Vance is the name. We thank Dr. John Murphy, CEO, and Robert Friedman, President, for joining us today, and I'm sure I will be having the pleasure of speaking with either or both of these gentlemen again as there is more new and exciting developments at New Vance. Thank you, gentlemen.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Well, right around this time every year, we talk to some really important people. You know, it's spring season. It's certainly allergy season. A lot of folks know it's fishing season, but we really want to remind folks that it's also coming into Relay for Life season. This critically important initiative from the American Cancer Society is really a global movement. It's a signature fundraiser that's dedicated not only to helping communities attack cancer, but for team members and volunteers and participants, it's a way to remember folks who are lost, to help those that are affected today, and give us a home team advantage against cancer. A lot of the funding that happens in Relay for Lives stay in communities to assist folks that are grappling with cancer, to help promote and enhance volunteer programs like driving people to therapy appointments and things like that. But a lot of the funding also goes to help underwrite critically important research projects. And every year, so much of the important cancer research that's being done is being done right here in Connecticut and New England, where we have this huge wealth of universities and hospital systems that take part in this. We're so pleased to make the acquaintance of Susan Myers. She's the American Cancer Society's regional board vice chair for the area here, and she's also a longtime participant in Relays for Life. This year, she's participating again in West Hartford. Susan, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, John.
So this is an important initiative that's been around for a long time, Susan. Before we start to talk a little bit about the background of Relay and how it impacts you and folks you love, tell us a little bit more about yourself and your experience. Are you a cancer survivor or one who is close to someone who has survived?
Sure. So my story with the American Cancer Society began shortly after the death of my eldest son from cancer at age 17.
I'm sorry.
So I thank you. And I share that with people not to shock people, but because it was the driving impetus for me to call the ACS and say, so what do you have? Because to your point of having something where I could go and grieve and to fight back and to be with others who understood what it was like to hear the words, you have cancer, and whether it's my loved one or, you know, fortunately I've not heard it, but now as years have passed, my younger sister is a two-time breast cancer survivor. Too many of my coworkers have heard the words, you have cancer, but we have a great number of survivors. So I get a lot of wonderful energy from continuing to participate through Relay for Life with the American Cancer Society, and I haven't lost my foundational driver for why I'm there.
Yeah. I imagine in talking with and interacting with folks throughout the region, and perhaps even in your travels, meeting up with folks in other regions of the country, it is heartening, if not even exciting, to hear survivor stories, to hear about people who have participated in clinical studies on programs and drugs and therapies that are maybe just becoming available to the general public or maybe even not yet available. I'm sure that gives you a lot of hope.
You know, absolutely. We are at such a cusp. And I'm not a medical person, right?
Yep.
But I read enough, and I am fortunate enough, the information that the American Cancer Society shares, whether it be, you know, this study was found, you see it on the evening news, or this clinical trial is now available, or these drugs are in the pipeline. And in my lifetime, I've seen significant improvements. And in the balance of my life, I know, you know, from the genome mapping, we now know how we can target therapies. We didn't know that 15 years ago. So, yeah, it really is a lovely moment of hope. And that resonates at relays that I go to, where you know, people are talking and somebody from Hartford Hospital, let's say, speaks at a relay. And they're able to share what is going on from cutting-edge discovery in research that the funding that we relayers bring to the American Cancer Society that makes the research possible.
Excellent. So, well, I'm sorry I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, it is, to your point, it's heartwarming. It's energizing. People, you know, you go to relay and you still shed tears, and you should because you're remembering. And it's still hard to fight back. Cancer is still, the treatments are harsh in many cases. So
yeah.
It's very important that we continue this fight.
Well, as a cancer survivor, I appreciate your effort and very sorry for your loss. Folks, if you want to learn about more in regards to Relay for Life, learn how you can help, make a donation if you can't participate, form a team, maybe start a Relay for Life this year or next in your community, or any background information on the movement, you can go to relayforlife.org or call 800-227-2345. We first want to recognize Litchfield High School and Sacred Heart University, who've already done their Relays for Life back in April. And we also want to shout out all of the Connecticut Relays for Life that are happening in this area this year, starting with Bethany, Orange, and Woodbridge, the Bow region, coming up on May 18th, Bristol on June 7th, North Central Connecticut on May 18th, Fairfield on June 8th. May 18th is in the Farmington Valley. Greater Danbury's Relay for Life is June 1st. The Relay for Life out in Haddam-Killingworth is coming up on June 29th. Hamden, North Haven is June 8th. Meriden-Wallingford is May 31st. And the Naugatuck Valley Relay, the relay where I first started now almost 30 years ago, is still going strong in Shelton on June 1st. I also neglected to mention Fairfield University, which also has already held its Relay for Life that happened on March 29th. We're chatting with Susan Myers. She's the American Cancer Society Regional Board Vice Chair. And Susan, let's talk about what Relay for Life's are in today's communities based on your experience.
Well, you did such a marvelous job of sharing with people the opportunity to attend. And so this is an open invite that I extend. You don't have to live in any of these communities, and you want to see what Relay is like, please just join us. It starts with a kickoff, and depending upon the Relay event, that the time of day varies. And the teams participate, teams start walking the track. And the reason we walk the track is that it's symbolic, because having cancer is a 24-hour activity.
Mm.
And so as a team, as you walk your laps, you're there with other people who are celebrating, who are remembering. The most impactful part of the Relay for Life to me is the Luminaria ceremony, which is held in the evening, where there are Luminaria bags that are around the track. And those are in memory of or in honor of. And it's a ceremony that really just is heartwarming. The other top ceremony to my mind is the Survivor Caregiver Lap, which is high energy, celebratory, and you see the faces of our survivors as they're walking around the track wearing their purple shirts, as purple is the color of Relay, and they meet up with their primary caregivers on the track. I defy people to keep, from crying. I don't know what your experience has been at the Survivor Lap, but it's just another heartwarming moment.
Yeah.
So from a Relay perspective, I've been to a number of fundraiser activities. This one speaks to its families, its friends, and everybody comes and is able to participate for as long as they can. Nobody's obligated to stay, if it's an 8-hour event or a 24-hour event, come for it as long as you can and meet others who really you probably have something in common with.
Well, we're going to meet a couple of those relayers right after the break. But before we take our break, and we're also going to come back and talk with Susan Myers for the last word after the break as well, folks. So stick with us. We want everybody to just pay attention to one of the most important aspects and maybe misunderstood. First of all, the Relay for Life is not a sporting event, and it is not a closed society. Virtually all of these events are open to the general public, especially for the earlier and more impactive part of the day or the evening. The public is welcome. Virtually everybody knows someone who's been touched by cancer, and certainly you're welcome. But even if you may be fortunate enough to not be touched by cancer or know someone who has, you are welcome as part of the community where this relay is happening. More importantly, if you are a cancer survivor, and don't forget, you are a cancer survivor from the day you are diagnosed, and if you are an 80-year-old who was diagnosed as an infant, you're still a cancer survivor. You're welcome to attend all of the pre-relay or early relay survivor functions. Sometimes there's brunches or barbecues or special events for survivors and caregivers, and especially also you caregivers, whether the person you have cared for is undergoing treatment, may have lost their battle with cancer, or if they are just newly diagnosed, you are really welcome. And I know before we take the break, Susan will reinforce that by telling you that there's probably nothing better that you could do for your caregiver or survivor or your morale than attending these survivor events. Right, Susan?
Oh, it is. And I've had the privilege of going to a number of relay events. It can make for a very busy spring, but everyone you go to is a little bit different. To your point, survivor receptions, survivor celebrations, the survivor recognition. My friends who are survivors who I've invited to relay, they didn't know what it was. To your point, it's not a sporting event. There's no running involved unless you want to.
Mm-hmm.
It is. They come back because, survivors are, you are a wonderful community, and you're the reason, you're the hope that provides the reason for the rest of us to continue to raise funds.
That's right.
So we need the energy of our survivors at the event.
Great. Well, we're going to hear some more inspiring motivations from Susan Myers, the ACS Regional Board Vice Chair, after we meet a couple of our other local relayers after the break. So, Susan, stick with us. We'll be back to talk to you after we meet Joseph and Kristen. And, folks, stick around with us. We do want to remind you, relays coming up in Greater Windham County, smack dab in the middle of the fall on October 19th, in West Hartford, and in Greater Waterbury on June 8th, Southington on May 31st. Southeastern Connecticut out in Norwich is happening on June 8th as well, the day before, June 7th, in South Windsor, Vernon, and Manchester. September 22nd at Quinnipiac University. June 1st in Plainville, Northeast Connecticut, way out in Brooklyn on May 18th. Newington on June 14th, and New Fairfield June 1st. A lot more to talk about and meet some relayers right after the break, so stick with us. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. This is Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. The pathway to recovery can seem hopeless for adults struggling with a significant mental illness, but this Tuesday, May 7th, Continuum is holding a free open access event on Legion Avenue in New Haven for adult individuals or their families who are struggling with mental illness and possible co-occurring substance use. Visitors can come by between noon and 5:30 to consult with doctors, clinicians, and nurses about their loved ones. Then from 5:30 to 7:30, visitors can attend a panel discussion to listen and interact with experts on topics like de-escalating techniques, marijuana and psychosis, alternatives to the ER, medication management, and you'll be able to share your experiences in a Q&A with the professionals. For more information about the event, visit continuum.org/access. That's continuumct.org/access. We also want to remind you that Mothers Against Drunk Driving urges everyone celebrating Cinco de Mayo today to designate a non-drinking driver to get them home safely. One-third of all drunk driving crashes on May 5th involve drunk drivers, according to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. And in fact, 270 people have died in drunk driving crashes during Cinco de Mayo in just the past 5 years. MAD has provided supportive services to nearly a million drunk and drug driving victims and survivors at no charge through local victims' advocates and their 24-hour victim helpline, 877-MAD-HELP. Visit MADD.org or call 877-ASK-MADD for Mothers Against Drunk Driving. So we are back from break. Thank you for sticking with us. We are talking about the American Cancer Society's Relay for Life. So people say, oh, well, you know, there's so many things for me to give my time and money and energy to. So why Relay for Life? Well, it's all about the numbers, folks. One out of every three of us, including myself, here in the U.S., will be or has been diagnosed with cancer in their lifetime. So you can help even the odds in the fight against cancer. The funds you raise to Relay for Life honor survivors and remember loved ones, give cancer patients and their families resources they need, like free rides to chemo, free places to stay near hospitals, even a live 24/7 helpline for answers and support. I'm so pleased to make the acquaintance of a fellow cancer survivor, Joseph DeLuca, is on the phone with us right now. He is a testicular cancer survivor, and as we record this, we are in the final couple of days of April, which is Testicular Cancer Awareness Month. So, Joseph, a real heightened situation for you. You are with the Relay for Life of Hamden and North Haven. We'd already shouted them out earlier in the program. That Relay for Life is coming up on June 8th. So I guess you're sort of getting into the hot zone in terms of getting up and ready for this Relay for Life, right?
Oh, absolutely. We're hitting the final push for our fundraising and getting all the logistics ready for the event on Saturday, June 8th.
Super. Well, I know somebody like you probably has some really, really important advice and information for men based on your own experience that you can pass on even if folks aren't participating in your Relay for Life. Tell us a little bit about your experience and the information that you'd like to convey to other men about possibly preventing or minimizing the impacts of testicular cancer.
Well, I mean, for me, I was diagnosed when I was 23 years old. I was playing college baseball at the time. And, you know, at 23, you don't expect to get a cancer diagnosis. So, you know, what I would suggest for the men is that basically from the moment you turn 16, you know, do your self-checks. You know, if you find something, speak to a doctor. you know, do your research, because it's better to catch it early than to let it linger.
Excellent. So you've already raised over $6,000 with previous Relay for Life activities, and now your team goal is $10,000. And I, if I understand correctly from the advance information I have, you've also changed your team name. Is that something that's effective this year?
Well, so in the past, I was a member of Nono's Vine, and this year I decided to try to create my own team. And it was just going to be basically cancer patients and cancer survivors. We're a very small team. I think there's just two of us right now. But the whole point is just trying to raise as much as we can and give back to Relay.
How long have you done, or have you been sort of a regular every single year for a long period of time?
I was pretty active when I was in college, and then I kind of had gotten away from it, but this is my fourth consecutive relay, and I've probably averaged about $6,000 a year in individual fundraising between the teams and this year. So I'm hoping that I can hit my goal again this year. So we'll see.
Well, a lot of people out there, so many, as we heard from the stat, one in three people will be diagnosed with cancer or have already survived cancer. But we want to speak to people who are recently diagnosed and who may be kind of in that almost nightmare state or dream state where they're kind of just getting oriented to the fact that they've been told they have cancer. And are looking for a support network and information and empathy. Talk a little bit about the experiences that you've had at Relays for Life talking with fellow survivors.
Sure. What I like talking to survivors is because no matter how you know depressed you might be or how anxious you might be, you can talk to somebody who, in my case, I've survived testicular cancer 19 years ago. 3 years ago, I was diagnosed with stage 4 rectal cancer, completely different type, but it's kind of like you talk to somebody and you realize, hey, you had that particular cancer, you know, 15 years ago. So it gives you that kind of light at the end of the tunnel that, you know, you're ready to take on the fight and that you know you can beat it.
And in terms of folks in the community who may have lost someone some time ago or who may not have that immediate proximity to cancer, what would you say to folks in the general community about Relays for Life? Because there is a lot of confusion out there. People who don't participate thinks it's some sort of a sporting event sometimes, or they think that it's really kind of a members only or a by invitation only event. Can you also say a few words to folks in the general community about why you'd love to see them come out to a Relay for Life near them?
Oh, sure. So the way I look at it is cancer is going to touch you in one way or another, whether it's losing a loved one, having been diagnosed yourself, or knowing somebody who's diagnosed. So if you don't know anybody who's been diagnosed with cancer or who's had to fight that battle, chances are you will in your lifetime. So it's better to get involved now so that you're preventing somebody in the future from being diagnosed if we can finally find a cure.
Very good. Joseph DeLuca is chatting with us. He is part of the Hamden North Haven Relay for Life. He's an East Haven resident, also now a two-time cancer survivor. We really appreciate you taking a few minutes to talk with folks on the air this morning. Joseph, good luck with your Relay for Life. And I really, really hope to be talking to you again and again and again in the future. Best of luck with your current situation and good luck with your Relay for Life. Thanks for being part of the program. It's great to hear from cancer survivors. And if you are interested in participating or attending, as you heard, community participation is important, even if you're not a caregiver, even if you're not a survivor. If somehow your life hasn't been touched by cancer, your community of cancer survivors and Relay supporters need you. Bethany Orange in Woodbridge, your Relay is May 18th. Bristol, June 7th. North Central Connecticut, also on May 18th. Fairfield is happening on June 8th, Farmington Valley May 18th, Greater Danbury on June 1st, Haddam-Killingworth June 29th, Hamden, North Haven on June 8th, Meriden Wallingford on May 31st, and the Naugatuck Valley in Shelton on June 1st. And we'll stop there now because our final survivor and guest on the program is Kristen Ostrowski, and she is involved with the Relay for Life for the Naugatuck Valley, which is happening in Shelton. As I said earlier in the segment, Kristen, before you picked up with me, the Relay for Life of the Valley and Shelton was my very first one, these many centuries ago. So great to talk to somebody who's still very active in the Valley. So you are an American Cancer Society volunteer and more than a decade involved in giving your time and talent. Tell us your story. Are you and do you relay because you are a survivor or because you are a caregiver or care for someone who has been touched by cancer?
So 10 years ago, I was just, well, actually 11 years ago, I was just on a team, and they posted that they were looking for a new event chair in the program, so I contacted somebody, and that's how I got involved, really. So I went straight from a team member to the event chair of the event at just 18 years old. So I did it till I was 28 years old, and it's been joy. I didn't know anybody with cancer, obviously, when I started at 18. I did know a young boy named Sashi Gusla, who was a cancer survivor, but I never really had any other connection besides that. And since Relay 10 years, I've met so many people. I am just a caregiver. I actually lost my father-in-law to cancer almost 2 years ago now. So Relay has touched me in so many other ways now within the past 10 years. I've met so many survivors who are still fighting, who have lost their battle, unfortunately, and those who are survivors themselves, and they've been without cancer for years now. So Relay's a big part of my life.
Great. Well, let's talk specifically in your area of expertise. You actually kind of represent a couple of important demographics. First, the age at which you started and took on a really important role at 18, and the fact that you, when you came on board, you only wanted to make a difference. You didn't really know anybody that had cancer. Talk a little bit in your current capacity where you mentor volunteer leaders and engage new people to form teams. Tell people out there first about volunteer opportunities that don't necessarily mean you have to be on a team or even really necessarily be heavily committed in terms of pre-event meetings or even potentially having to go and volunteer at a Relay for Life in your community or near you for the entire duration of the relay. There are a lot of different opportunities for folks to volunteer, aren't there?
There absolutely are. We have several different committees and we have several different personalities. And obviously being involved as the event chair for 10 years, we had committee members come and go. Like I said, different personalities. Some are very outgoing. Some people just like to stay behind the scenes. So it's a great opportunity for everybody to get involved. We have day of volunteers. We have young children who actually volunteer for community service hours as well. We have, you know, you can be fully involved on the committee. Or like I said, you can do day of, you can do pre-event. There's so many different great opportunities. So I usually sit down with people and see where they stand and what they want to get involved with. And then we try to place you in the best working capacity for you as a volunteer.
Yeah, there's really 365 days a year, there are opportunities to support and be involved with something touching a Relay for Life here in Connecticut, probably in your region, if not your very own community. But also there are some concentrated opportunities if you just want to go and help with parking or help with a survivor caregiver pre-relay brunch or luncheon or a barbecue. If you just want to go and help out for a few hours selling luminary during that sort of prime time in the early evening when a lot of stuff is happening at a relay site, or perhaps even involved in a post-relay cleanup team or in some other capacity, helping to raise money or sponsorship, all kinds of opportunities. We want to remind folks that additional Relays for Life are happening throughout Connecticut for the balance of the year, including in New Fairfield on June 1st, Newington June 14th, in Brooklyn out in Northeast Connecticut on May 18th, in Plainfield on June 1st at Quinnipiac University in Hamden on September 22nd. South Windsor Vernon Manchester's Relay for Life is June 7th. The next day in Norwich, the Southeastern Connecticut Relay, June 8th. Southington, May 31st. And Greater Waterbury, as well as West Hartford, on June 8th. And out in the fall, Greater Windham County will be celebrating their Relay for Life on October 19th. We are chatting with Kristen Ostrowski. And Kristen, the last word we want to have with you is, in the final minute that we have with you, is to just shout out to folks who might be interested in trying to form a team. We heard from our previous guest, Joseph DeLuca, that his team has sometime numbered only two or three people. It is not too late to form a team for a relay that might even be happening in June, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You can sign up at any point. We had people actually sign up the day of the event. And I guess a lot of people think it's a running event because it's Relay for Life, but it's actually just a walk. And it's an 18-hour journey. And it's just when people form teams or raise money together for leading up to the event. But like I said, you can join even the day of. So we hope people just come on down and join our event and just learn what it really is to be a Relay for Life participant.
Excellent. Kristen Ostrowski is an 11-year volunteer for Relay for Life in the American Cancer Society. Her Relay for Life is in the Naugatuck Valley in Shelton. Kristen, we want to thank you for your volunteerism and passion and all that you do for cancer survivors, caregivers, toward the effort to support research and cancer support programs in our community. We appreciate you taking a few minutes to talk with us this morning. Well, it was certainly inspiring to hear stories from the front line of survivors and participants. Susan Myers is back with us for the last word. She's the ACS Regional Board Vice Chair. And Susan, we've got about a minute or two. Just hit folks with that final last appeal and bit of information about Relay for Life. And we'll bid you farewell and wish you good luck as you go out and attend all these various relays in your capacity.
Well, thank you, John. I very much appreciate the opportunity to share information with your audience. The thing that resonates with me as a longtime volunteer, Relay for Life is primarily volunteers with the American Cancer Society, and we're now attacking cancer from every angle. That's a foundational, powerful statement. The funds raised by relayers helps to make sure that there's research dollars, critical, right? Mm-hmm. That rides to treatment, as you mentioned, are available. There's also lodging programs. So somebody lives 8 hours from where their primary treatment facility is. You don't want to be driving back and forth. Through the American Cancer Society, funding is available to provide alternative lodging. And you mentioned to me the most wonderful number that the funding makes possible is the 1-800-227-2345. I'll say it again, 1-800-227-2345. It's the National Cancer Information Center. Anyone can call 24 hours a day, 365 days a year to find out information about where relays are held, but also information about clinical trials. Somebody's just been diagnosed with cancer. What do I do? What questions should I ask? Somebody who just wants to have somebody to cry with because, guess what, they don't want to burden their family. We as relayers help to make this possible through the funds that we raise, and that's just the beautiful icing on the cake in addition to going to relay and coming out feeling good about having made a difference.
Excellent. We want to thank you, Susan Myers, ACS Regional Board Vice Chair, Joseph DeLuca, and Kristen Ostrowski, frontline relayers. Don't forget, folks, there's a Relay for Life near you, whether you are touched by cancer or not. We'd love to see you out on the track supporting those who are volunteering. RelayForLife.org is where you go for more information. 800-227-2345 is the number to call. We'll see you at your local Relay for Life. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a PSA relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for airtime in writing to me via email at john.voket, that's john.voket, at connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast without permission of Connoisseur Media. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scotts, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voket. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and important information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.